Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Velocity of Content. It's Friday, January 28th, 2022. Today, as we do each week, we check in with Publishers Weekly on news from the world of books and publishing. Andrew Albanese, PW senior writer, joins me with his reporting and editorial analysis. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
The Association of American Publishers released final sales numbers for 2021 this week, Andrew. The picture it gives is of a very healthy industry. What did we learn?
Yeah, so last week we talked about NPD sales for 2021, which showed that print book sales are up a very strong 8.9%. And now this week we have the last piece of the 2021 sales puzzle from the AAP StatShot program, which of course is a bit more comprehensive than NPD's program. And it shows, the AAP numbers show, a 12.2 jump in sales across the publishing industry and a very strong 11.4% gain in the adult trade segment. And those are in line with projections, what we thought we were going to see from AAP. And frankly, the real cause for celebration is they mark a real sort of wire-to-wire banner year for the book business in 2021, as opposed to 2020, which ended up, of course, being very strong, but stumbled in the first weeks and months of the pandemic.
What parts of the business led gains for publishers in 2021?
Sure. So you can read all about this on the Publishers Weekly site. And my boss, PW Editor-in-Chief Jim Milliot, has a story up there now. But for 2021, the publishing business saw a strong rebound in sales in the K-12 and instructional markets, which had taken a tumble for obvious reasons when schools closed in 2020. And of course, there was another solid year for publishers in the trade segments. This, according to the 1,369 publishers who report data to the AAP. And we should note that we're talking about unit sales and not in terms of revenue. But if we want to talk about revenue, that was pretty good too. The industry added about $1.7 billion in revenue, hitting $15.4 billion last year, up from $13.7 billion in 2020. So back to the K-12 market, how strong was that turnaround in the K-12 and instructional markets? Well, after falling almost 20% in 2020, for obvious reasons, there were no schools, schools were out of session, sales in that category jumped 34.6% in 2021 as states and school districts returned to, shall we say, more normal buying patterns. And I might add, I think probably a lot of schools had to replace materials because a lot of school materials, and I know this personally from my own kids, material went home with them in the first months of 2020 during the pandemic, and it just never made it back to school. Now, sales in higher education also recovered as people got back to campus. After a drop of 4.3% in 2020, the higher ed segment was up 2.5% last year. And as for the industry's largest segment, and the one that we talk about most on this program, adult trade books, publishers saw, as I said, an 11.4% increase last year. And that, of course, comes on the heels of a 12% increase in 2020. And again, as I pointed out last week, and I tend to point out whenever I can, that's almost double the growth the industry saw from the 6 years prior to the pandemic, a period in which annual print sales, they started their rebound in about 2013. And up until the pandemic, they had grown modestly year over year. But now they've really taken off. And again, it's always nice when you can stuff a decade's worth of growth into just 2 years. Positive territory for children's and YA too, which jumped 12.9% in 2021. This on top of a 6.4% gain in 2020. So again, they're almost 20% gain in 2 years for the children's and YA market. Pretty strong stuff. Religion books also increased, up 11.2% last year, and this coming after a 4.2% gain in 2020. So you see a trend here, right? Everything pointing up for the last 2 years. Very strong 2021. Even university presses joined the party. They were up 12.2% last year.
And we are coming to the close of January 2022 already, Andrew, yet we're seeing signs of cooling off in the marketplace. This week saw another small drop from 2021 sales levels as far as weekly sales go. So has your thinking changed at all about how the rest of the year might unfold?
No, not really. You know, as my editor Jim Milliot notes in his PW story this week, you know, sales in the trade segment, particularly in the adult book segment, started to cool off toward the end of last year. December sales were actually down slightly, about 1.8% compared to December of 2020. But again, you know, we had talked about the supply chain issues in the market, and I really do think, as many industry observers have suggested, that we saw more people get out there and get their holiday shopping done earlier this year because we saw really strong numbers in November for trade book sales. Now, as for 2022, you know, I think it's natural that after two rip-roaring years that we pretty much all expect a bit of a slowdown this year, especially given the headwinds the industry is facing, right? We still have supply chain issues that have to get worked out. Though I will say that I don't think publishers so far have gotten quite the credit they deserve for how well they've managed the supply chain challenges so far. It's really quite remarkable when you think about it. And the two trade segments and the religion category too all benefited from another year of a decline in returns. That, of course, is returns to bookstores. In 2020, returns overall fell by more than 20% compared to 2019. Now, in 2021, returns have dropped 19% in the children's YA category, 7.7% in adult books, and religion books, too, saw a 5.5% drop in returns. Now, historically, we're used to seeing return rates, this prior to the pandemic, of around, you know, as high as 30% on average for books. But those rates have been cut almost in half, if not more, the last 2 years. And that, of course, means that more books are getting into readers' hands and not headed back to the warehouse. Now, the question is, of course, can that hold in 2022? And we're going to find out. But if so, even if most of that holds, I think, even if some of that holds, I'll say, I think that says a lot about the strength of the reading resurgence that we've seen in the last 2 years. At the same time, we have inflation that's still running hot and no real idea as to when that's going to come to an end. So consumers could very well be feeling the pinch this year. And I think that may put publishers in a tricky spot when it comes to pricing. So there's a lot to keep an eye on in 2022. But it's only January, and I think right now publishers are rightly thrilled with another stellar performance in 2021 and feeling pretty hopeful that 2022 is going to be another decent year. And hopefully the success of the last couple of years will afford publishers to maybe act boldly when it comes to sort of, you know, facing the challenges that might lie ahead.
Efforts continue across the U.S. to ban books in public libraries and in schools. National media attention alighted this week on a Tennessee school board's decision to remove Art Spiegelman's classic Holocaust graphic novel, Mouse. A shocking announcement at any time, but especially when it overlapped with the annual observance of International Holocaust Remembrance Day.
Yeah, and we're going to have much more reporting on all of these book banning efforts going forward. We've got a bunch of stories in the works. And man, when I heard the news about Mouse being banned, I have to say my jaw kind of hit the floor. And I think that's because with this banning, it really has become clear that the forces that are sort of animating all these book banning efforts are just not even trying to hide their intent anymore. I probably don't have to do this for our audience, but if you're not familiar with Mouse, well, this is your chance to go pick it up and check it out. Because from personal experience, that book had a huge impact on me, and it is one of the most powerful, important works, I think, well, in American literature. And I'm not being hyperbolic, right? Because Mouse is a Pulitzer Prize-winning graphic novel about the experiences of Holocaust survivors. It follows the author Art Spiegelman's Jewish parents in 1940s Poland. It addresses the anti-Semitism they faced in their everyday lives and their eventual internment in Auschwitz. And the format, I have to say, as a graphic novel, it's really kind of a source of the work's power, right? It's just so amazingly rendered. It makes you just have a visceral reaction to seeing the panels and reading the story. And one of the reasons why I think it is such an important work for young people is because of the format, and because in many cases, it's their first real engagement with Holocaust history, and it really hits hard. Now, we've seen from the playbook so far that, you know, many of these attempts to ban books around the country, the vast majority of them deal with LGBTQ issues or issues of race. In fact, this week, a local mayor in Mississippi vowed to withhold local library funding unless, and I'll quote him here, all homosexual materials were pulled from its shelves, which is, you know, just a terrifying development too, right? And all these bannings sort of coincide with bills that are like banning the teaching of critical race theory, for example, which of course is really a mandate to sort of force, you know, states and localities to teach a sanitized version of racism in America. Because let's be honest, critical race theory isn't being taught in our public schools. In Osceola, Florida, for example, the school board has specifically banned the teaching of the 1619 Project, another Pulitzer Prize winner, for example, along with anything that suggests that racism is anything more than, you know, just bad behavior by a few bad apples, as if, you know, segregation and redlining, et cetera, weren't actually sanctioned by the government. And of course, you know, these book banning efforts come as we have organized groups, for example, like the Proud Boys, who've been showing up to school board meetings and intimidating parents in the room. The point being is that this rise in book banning is not so much about parental objections as much as it's trying to be portrayed that way. I mean, I remember when it seemed kind of quaint now that Captain Underpants was the top banned book. But today, it's about, as one commentator recently told me, the weaponization of parental control in service of political aims. And I think with this most recent banning of Mouse, we're now seeing an anti-Semitic element on the agenda, and that really kind of frightens me too. Of course, that's not how any of this is being portrayed, right? The McGinn County, Tennessee Board of Education, which voted 10 to nothing to pull Mouse from the curriculum, saying it should be replaced with another book that doesn't have objectionable content. Well, the objectionable content here, they said, is some rough language, and they cited a drawing of a nude woman in one panel in Mouse. And I mean, my reaction to that was just, I was stunned. I mean, what the actual, well, I'm not going to swear here, but I don't want to use any rough language, but we're talking about eighth graders, you know, there's this thing called the internet. Perhaps you've heard of it, and some pretty rough language on the internet and the occasional nude woman. So I'm told, I don't know. This fleeting nude panel in Mouse, which is a tragic depiction, this Holocaust story. If that fleeting panel of a nude woman worries you, well, good Lord, don't look at TikTok, right? I mean, that image in Mouse is a very, very small image, we should point out. And it's one that actually depicts the author's mother being found in a bathtub after she's cut her wrists. So anyone who could read that, look at that in the panel and say, my God, she's naked, I think we're missing the point here. Now, in interviews, Art Spiegelman has expressed some compassion. And, you know, he said he was baffled by the banning. And he said it did not appear that the board pulled the book because they were, you know, didn't want to teach the Holocaust or were anti-Semitic. And that's really the kind of person that Art Spiegelman is, right? He's a very compassionate guy. But the author may not be aware, I think, of all the political elements surrounding this wave of book banning. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you either that I think that I know for a fact that the board is anti-Semitic in banning this book, because I don't. But what I will say is that the reasons cited for banning Mouse don't make any sense. They just don't fly. And that's something that Art Spiegelman acknowledged too. He told CNN that he thought maybe the board was so afraid of having to defend the decision to teach Mouse as part of the curriculum that it led to, and I'll quote his response here to CNN, this kind of daffily myopic response. So, you know, I really don't know what to make specifically of the board's decision, why they felt the need to undertake it, other than to say that if they do, as they say they want to, find a sanitized version of Holocaust history that they think is okay to present to their students, one without rough language or disturbing images, then they will be utterly failing in their duties. Because Mouse, in my opinion, and in the opinion of many other people, including the Pulitzer Prize Committee, is one of the most powerful and engaging representations of the Holocaust. But let's be clear, there's no way to clean up the horrors of the Holocaust, and there's no way to avoid teaching about the Holocaust.
In Granbury, Texas, Andrew, students made the news for pushing back against their school board's decision to adopt a controversial book banning policy at the local high school.
Yeah, and if there's a glimmer of hope in this sort of depressing time with all these book bannings, I think it's this, right? The video from that meeting is online. You can find it easily on Twitter, and I want to encourage our listeners to go and check it out. Because as disturbed as I was by the school board chair in that video justifying this new book banning policy in Granbury, Texas, by saying in a sort of, you know, snarky tone, hey, it's not like we're pulling Shakespeare or Hemingway off the shelves. I mean, like, face meet palm, right? I mean, you could not be any more clueless if that's your defense of this book banning policy. But as disturbing as this all is, and as disturbing as that defense was, watching the students go up to the microphone and stand up for their rights, stand up for these books, was absolutely inspiring. And I think this is a playbook for why and how we beat this pernicious wave of book banning, right? We stand up, we fight back. In some ways, for these students and for all of us, really, these book banning efforts are teaching us a lesson about democracy and society and equity that maybe we couldn't get from a book. Maybe we're getting a real lesson as to, you know, how we really need to fight for equity in society. Two final observations here. One is that I firmly believe that we as an industry so far are not doing nearly enough to push back against this wave of book banning. And, you know, I'll have more to say on this later in future PW pieces. But, you know, for example, the AAP has issued, you know, two sentences about this back in October. And, you know, I saw a very impassioned letter from Simon & Schuster CEO Jonathan Karp a while back. But I don't think we followed up on this with the action that we really need to. Look, you know, readers have rewarded publishers for the last 2 years with some strong years of sales growth. Just got done talking about it. I think it's time for the industry to pay these readers back by suiting up and getting in the game here. And the other thing, the second thing I wanted to mention is, you know, again, check out that video from Granbury, Texas. One student told the board that she wasn't going to waste her time talking about slippery slopes because she learned from a book in her library about logical fallacies. And the point she said she did want to make was that, and I'll sort of paraphrase her here, never in history has any government that sought to ban books or restrict information from its public, from its citizens, been remembered as the good guys. And I literally leapt up from my chair when she said that, and I pumped my fist because these kids are ready to fight. Now, don't we owe it to them to have their backs?
It's a fine question, Andrew. Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer. Thanks for joining me on the program today.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on the next podcast from CCC, plain language summaries help to move published scientific research beyond the basic definition of open access availability toward a more ambitious goal of understandability. Plain language summaries are fundamental infrastructure for strengthening science in an age of information overload. Adeline Rosenberg with Oxford Pharmacogenesis is a medical writer and a rare disease patient advocate. As a member of a virtual community of patients, she's excited for the arrival of plain language to cutting-edge science.
Completely excited. You know, even pre-pandemic, the online community has been a huge part of disabled and chronic illness life for many people who, previous to lockdowns, may not have been able to leave their homes because of their own health. So, you know, having access to Twitter and Instagram and other social medias has been really important. And a lot of what you see happening in those communities is the sharing of research. Here's something new that's happened in the field of the disease that I want to share about. And, you know, people discussing what might this mean? What could the impact of this be?
Plain language means better science, coming on the next CCC podcast. Our producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burris Marketing. You can subscribe to this program wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening. Join us again soon for another Velocity of Content podcast from CCC.